It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Megan Todd.
Now, things are not as normal today exactly, which is not a bad thing. Adam is in Timbuktu being the world's greatest soccer dad. Where is that, Tampa or someplace like that?
North Tampa, yeah.
Okay. And Megan, whom many of you know in person and others will know by the radio, works for us in the office and has agreed to do shows every now and again for several reasons. But one of the things I like the most is that she is firmly a millennial.
Unfortunately.
Now, one of the things I like about the company and the show are you get different points of view because, believe me, a 70-year-old has a lot of differences between him, me, and, for instance, a son who is 44, and Adam has differences in, I don't mean arguments or disagreements, but just the way you look at things, with Megan, who is a millennial. So I love the fact that we get to share viewpoints. More you should know about her is that she is a CFP in training. In other words, she can't get her mark just yet until she puts in a little more time, a little more education, but we'll be talking about that too. Because one of the things I've been talking about for quite some time now is the unbelievable potential there is in that market for female CFPs. CFPs in general are good, but being a female, 52% of the financial assets in this country are controlled by females. There's a lot of females who really like dealing with females, and if you like people, and you like money, and you like math, and you're thinking, man, I'd like to make more than a minimum wage job sometime in my life, you should really look into it, just so you know. So feel free to pick your brain today on any topic at all, and you'll get a little bit of a younger perspective on things, hopefully anyway. But I'll be doing the same. I'll be asking her questions. Anyway, another week in the market goes by, and it starts out just humming along. Everybody's happy as a clam. And then, well, Joe Biden opened his mouth, and in 5 minutes, it wrecked everything that we had going on. And I'll just let Adam tell you about that, because that's what he loves to do.
Yeah, definitely. It was actually a bit of a wild week, with the end being the net result was almost nothing happened.
Isn't that the truth?
We had several triple-digit moves in both directions on the Dow. So it was up, it was down, it was up, it was down. The wildest move, though, is the one that you're talking about. It happened on Thursday, and there was a headline that came out that President Biden was going to give a speech that night about some plan that he has. It has some pretty name, like Save the American Family, or I can't remember exactly. But one of the things in that plan was a capital gains tax on people earning over $1 million a year, and it would move it from 20% to over 40%. And as soon as that headline came out, the market dropped like a rock. It was around 1 o'clock on Thursday. It was up over 100. Suddenly, it was down more than 400. And it was really weird because that plan was announced during Biden's campaign. This is not new. If you go back and listen to some of our podcasts from last fall, you'll hear us talking about this exact plan. So it is very strange for the market to react to news that is already known. I don't know if people thought he wasn't really going to follow through on that, but he was pretty open about it. So I was just surprised by the move. And then Friday, apparently everyone forgot about the news, and the market went back up to and ended the week within 1% of where it started. So
someone reminded them, as you said, well, he ran on that. And, oh, okay. That's good.
He really did. So it was just really weird, a weird thing for the market to react to so suddenly and so harshly, because usually the market reacts when there's new news, not old news. For the week, the S&P traded down just 0.1%. The NASDAQ was down 0.3%, and the Dow was down 0.5%. So really just kind of a flat week, even though there was some excitement in between Monday and Friday. The reason that raising capital gains taxes for high-income earners is a bad idea, there's several reasons. For one, it discourages wealthy people from investing their money when 43.8% of the profit would be given to the government for doing absolutely nothing. So the thing about wealthy people is that they do tend to invest their money. They put it into things like businesses and the stock market, and that is that creates new jobs and that creates more wealth for the for people in general. But if you have to weigh out paying half of that profit to the government, you might look at other ideas, things to do with your money that maybe wouldn't generate a 43.8% tax on it. So that's it seems like a relatively small thing because it affects so few people, but those people control a huge amount of wealth and a huge amount of the assets in this country. And when you threaten them with taking away their profit, they're going to react. It's not going to be a simple, I'll just gladly write a bigger check to the government. So that's the other thing is that it affects small business owners the worst. And these small business owners aren't necessarily rich. They may never have a year where they make $1 million in a year, except for the year that they decide to exit their small business that they may have worked their entire lives to build. And if they're successful, maybe that business is worth over $1 million. So they sell it, and guess what? Suddenly they did make $1 million in that year, and they're going to be slapped with giving 43.8% of it to the government. And that was probably their retirement fund. So it has unintended consequences. I think it's a terrible idea, even though it really affects very, very few people. There were some bright spots in this down week. Mid-cap stocks were up just under 1%. Small caps posted a slight gain. Healthcare was up 1.8% to lead all sectors, and industrials and materials also posted gains. So the losses weren't uniform across the board. Energy really dragged the S&P down. It fell 1.8%, and consumer discretionary wasn't much better. It dropped 1.1%. Internationally, China finally had a good week, gaining 4.4%, but India brought the emerging markets down. It was down 2.3%. They're struggling to fight COVID right now, and until they get that in order, I think that India is going to be a little bit of a drag. However, emerging markets did post a decent week. They gained 0.5%. Commodities also had a good week. The index climbed over 1%. Oil was a pretty big drag on that number, though, dropping 1.6%. Fixed income had a decent week. Yields actually fell again. So that spike we saw from January to March has really been reversing, and that's been helping the bond market, even though the overall market's still down about 2.5% for the year. Another asset class that had a bit of a rough week was Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. Last week, Bitcoin was trading above 60,000, but this week it plunged under its 50-day moving average and actually dropped below $50,000. So a drop of more than about 15,000. It did rally a bit on Friday to close over 50,000, though.
Yeah, but it never stops trading. It's back down to 49.6 this morning.
Oh, I didn't see that when I was prepping, but yeah, it had a wild week for sure.
It did indeed. Probably quite a bit more to say about this market this week, so we'll wrap up anything on the other side. As usual, we will have the trivia question, and I decided what would be more appropriate this week than to have a millennial trivia question. So I'll give you that right after the break. We'll wrap up the market, and then we'll start talking to a true millennial about what's important to other true millennials. And by the way, there are bunches of them. All right, don't go anywhere. This is the Banwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banwee.
And I'm Adam Banwee.
And I'm Megan Todd.
And Megan and I are here in the studio. Adam's out being soccer dad. So you can ask us anything and get three potentially different answers from three different age groups today. So give us a call. Lines are open, 904-222-8255. Trivia question this week brought to you, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Here's my millennial question for the week. What percentage of millennials show even a very basic level of financial literacy? This is not the same as how many have some money in their 401k or in the bank. It's even a basic level of financial literacy so they can talk about this stuff with some degree of competence. All right, Adam, you want to wrap up anything else in the market?
Yeah, there were just a couple of things. Earnings season is underway, and just under 200 companies have now reported. So far, 86% of companies have beat their earnings estimates, which is just ridiculously high. This number will probably drop as the season progresses, but if it stood at this level, it would be an all-time record. So pretty impressive earnings so far across the board.
Kind of situational because the early reporters are in the financial field, and it just happened that the financial people knocked them dead this month or this quarter.
They did, but still, it's a good start. So
it is.
I think it will be a good earnings season, just based off of how well the economy is doing right now. But we'll see what happens.
Did you manage to find revenue beats this time? I did not.
I didn't pull it this morning, so okay. I'll take a look at it for
next week is the real start of the earnings season. So we'll have some really good stats for you by then, and it should give us a much clearer direction than this sort of 10% down we did. Although we like the indicator, so we'll give us some credibility.
The economic news was pretty light this week, but there were two big housing numbers, and it basically showed what we already suspected. Existing home sales declined, but it was because there's no inventory right now. A healthy inventory is around 6 months of unsold homes, and right now we're around 2 months of unsold homes, which is near an all-time low. And so basically, buyers are out there, and they can't find anything to buy in the existing home market. And so what are they doing? They're buying new homes because new single-family home sales were up 20.7% in March and are now up 66.8% from a year ago. That is insane.
Does that mean builders are building starter homes or millennials are overspending?
I think there's a lot going on there. I don't know about overspending, but they are borrowing really cheap money. The 30-year mortgage rate ticked back down to 3.1% this week. And people are leaving cities and buying homes away from cities. And they're moving to different parts of the country out of lockdown states into free states. So there's just a ton going on. And people are buying homes. We never thought millennials would get off the. We used to make fun of them for sleeping on their parents' couch in the basement. But they really are out there, and they are buying homes at a very rapid clip.
More to come on that topic, to say the least, today.
Yep.
One interesting thing too: the median existing home price is up 17.2% from a year ago.
Incredible, isn't it?
Yeah,
I was talking to Howard and Angela as they were leaving and we were coming in today because they had been reporting that in this past week there were 1,017 new listings in Jacksonville, or accepted contracts, over 1,000, whereas the number of new listings that came in was in the 500s. And I put two and two together rather easily on that and said, the shortage gets worse, right?
Yeah, every week it will at this rate, and I don't know what's going to end it, but eventually either prices will be too high, mortgage rates will go up, or something will happen to end this. But right now, you just can't find a home to buy unless you're willing to fork over more than you're probably willing to pay.
Well, if you want to put that in a nutshell, what's going to change is market conditions.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like the example I always love to use is oil. Supply and demand is its own law, basically, and it always works. With oil, the cure for high oil prices is high oil prices. And the cure for low oil prices is low oil prices. All that means very simply is it's the demand part that changes in reaction to the price part. So it'll happen. I'm not at all concerned.
You're absolutely right. That will happen.
And I don't know how long it's going to take. It'll take a while yet. And as you know,
don't know either.
Real estate is local. And local to us not only means Jacksonville, but it especially means Florida. The exodus out of New York and New Jersey and places like that isn't really stopping all that much at North Carolina. They are going someplace that's free and open, warmer, sunny, inexpensive so far, and Florida is absolutely booming right now. So expect this to continue for a while here anyway. Meanwhile, is that good for the market? Well, please enlighten us all.
Yeah, I think that what might stop that is August, when it gets to be 95 and humid every day, and those New Yorkers look around and say, why am I here again? That might stop it.
What were those doors again? Could be.
Yeah.
And the other thing that might have an influence is, as we were talking last week, there's a big move in Congress to eliminate the cap, or at least modify the cap on the SALT deductions, state and local taxes, and it will slow the exodus out of the high-tax states if that cap is lifted, because they'll no longer be getting punished as badly. On the other hand, it didn't take taxes to get me out of an up-north climate, so yeah, there'll be a lot of them that just decide they've had it with winter and so on. Anyway, what do you look for this week?
In terms of the market?
Yep.
I think we should be entering a consolidation period. We've seen the market rise really high, really fast, and I would not be surprised to see more of what we saw this week.
Both directions? Or just up, up, up?
No, I think sideways is more likely than up, okay. up. I mean,
consolidation.
If companies keep beating at 86% rate, you might see the market go up. But I don't expect that to continue. And I think that some consolidation would be a better direction for the market right now.
But one thing to look for sure this week, big tech is doing a lot of their announcing this week. And as you know, the NASDAQ has not been setting the records that it had been for a while. It has a couple of weeks ago, it was up a bit. But if the tech companies come in really strong, watch for the NASDAQ to regain its old mole, I say.
Yeah, speaking of consolidation, if you look at Amazon's chart, they've been basically trading sideways for over a year.
Yep.
And so if they have a bang-up quarter, that could really that would be one thing that could propel the market higher.
Yeah, it's kind of like crypto. You know, you go up just so fast that when it starts reverting a little bit back toward the mean, it looks like there's a big crash in it, but all it's really doing is catching up with itself. That's all.
Yeah.
I'm not worried. Okay. Well, I look for the same thing. Let's talk millennialism. What is a millennial? Someone born between... Now, you can find a lot of different answers, but the one that I got that I kind of like is about 1981 to around 2000, somewhere there. Megan, you agree with that?
96, but yeah.
See, everybody... My youngest daughter has that exact cutoff, too. It's January 1, 1981, because she was born in November of 1980. And like many people, she really doesn't like the prospect of being labeled a millennial.
I have no choice. I was 95, so.
You have no choice. You are absolutely
I almost missed the cut.
So there's only two things to do. If you're not one, you avoid being called one. And if you are one, you try to make it better for everybody. And then you'll lose that gigantic reputation, right?
That's true, but I guess it's better than being born in 97. And what is that, Gen X or Gen Y?
Gen Z.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. The other name for millennials, by the way, is Gen Y.
Ooh.
So, you know, if you want to avoid the term, you can, but that's not the popular thing. All right, so we know Megan is one. Inescapable news.
Very true.
And in many respects, she is typical. But in many more respects, she is way atypical. And we'll tell you a little bit about that as the show develops. But first, what is, in your opinion, with all the people you know that are in your age group, what is the first goal of most millennials today?
See, that's a hard one to pin down, just because in my case, it was college and then, you know, move out of the house, and one of those things happened, and I'm still living at home, but hey, the couch saves me money. I find change in there all the time. It's just kind of finding a job that we're enjoying, because we're not wanting to stay in a place where we're feeling undervalued or underpaid in any way, shape, or form.
Okay. And part of that, I'm sure, involves things like education,
mm-hmm.
location. And we will be talking a lot about that. We've got some music playing now, but I've got a list of concepts and questions for Megan. And then, of course, we have all of the people out there listening. If you want to get put to the head of the line and talk to us, Just call 904-222-8255, and callers, as always, will be put directly to the head of the line. So coming up, we're going to talk about home ownership. We're going to talk about making money. We're going to talk about financial literacy. We're going to talk about relationships, children, the many things that confront people of Megan's age. When you are stretched and drained as many ways as people are when they're millennials, then you've got a lot of things to balance out there, and it's very difficult. That's why a lot of people are calling for some help. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Megan Todd.
You've got just a touch of delay going down to Tampa, but Adam, your connection is superior today.
Really, well, good.
Yeah, you sound like you're sitting next to us. All right, have a caller on the line. Of course, we're going to do that, but I wanted Megan to first do a couple of public service announcements, one personal, one for the collective on us.
Well, it's also for the show.
Well, of course it is.
So first and foremost, we have an updated website, still the same URL, www.vanweefinancial.com. So check that out. It's been in production for a while. But I also wanted to shamelessly plug that our listeners are now international, because I have a friend over visiting family for a wedding, and he is in Israel listening right now over the internet. So we are officially an international radio show.
And definitely picks up the long-distance listener award for the week.
Yes.
So thank you for listening. Quick reminder, the trivia question is out there. What percentage of millennials show even a very basic level of financial literacy? And we have a bracket. It's between 0 and 100. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, team Van Wee, Gurus of Northeast Florida. And we thank you for all the good you do. Phil from Orange Park. And I'm going to say on your trivia question, I was going to go 45%, but I'm going to knock it down to, after careful consideration and analyzation, and I'm probably wrong, 35%. How do we do?
You're wrong.
Okay.
But you're too high. Right.
Listen, so so prayers are welcome. So I'm going to say a longtime listener, once in a while caller when my health up to it, prayers are welcome. And we thank you from Orange Park in Northeast Florida for all the good. And everybody listen, even in Israel and Austria and Poland and everywhere else, we thank you for all the good that you do all the time. God bless you all.
And thank you for the kind words. Thanks so much. Phil had the right idea when he changed his own opinion from 45 to 35, because he's sneaking up or down on it.
That's true.
Whatever. So
that's very true.
Now we have a really, really solid bracket. All right. Back to what do millennials really want out of life? Another call coming in, but we'll talk first until we get some info on it.
Oh, okay. So as we said earlier, you know, millennials were born contested, but 81 to 96 is the typical, and we actually account for like 72 million of the United States population.
Yes, in fact, as a red hot fact that I discovered not 3 hours ago, you are now more numerous than us baby boomers.
Yes, we are,
by a hair. But the difference is we're dying off faster than you are, so you'll continue stretching your lead.
Okay. I mean, that's very true.
Yeah, look at the purchasing power. Let's say there's 72 million of each of us. Mm-hmm. 72 million baby boomers have a heck of a lot more economic power than the same number of baby boomers. But it's changing really quickly.
Well, I mean, if you're related to those baby boomers, maybe you're getting an inheritance.
Well, yeah, we're going to turn over, I don't know, $10, $15 trillion to subsequent generations. The millennials will pick up some of that. But what they really want, though, is their own thing for now. All right, Alan retired, by the way, so Tom and I are learning new hand signals today. I mean, anyway, good morning to whoever it is. Oh, Bosco? Did we get you?
No.
Oh.
This is Pat, and I want to guess a trivia
question. Oh, Pat, hi. Absolutely.
Hi.
Shoot.
Am I on or what?
Yeah. You're good. Can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay, good. Yeah, go ahead. Shoot us a number.
16%.
You have managed to lower the bracket, lower the spread on the bracket. You're a little too low.
I'm too low.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's the good news, right?
I guess so.
So we're better than 16% of the millennials who can talk a little bit of turkey and know what they're talking about. That's a wonderful thing.
Well, that's good. You all have a good day.
Thanks so much. Appreciate the call.
Uh-huh.
And Bosco, perhaps, here?
Yes, sir. Yes,
good.
Sir. How y'all doing?
Sorry for my previous error. But
no worries.
We're doing great. Where are you this fine day?
I'm in the beautiful town of Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh, good. Okay. And
just came back from a bicycle ride to Tallahassee. And
boy,
it's pedaling into a 25-mile-an-hour headwind.
You're just trying to make it sound like fun, aren't you?
Of course.
Would you want to take a shot today?
Yeah, I just, you know, considering the state, you know, that, you know, our educational system is, and, you know, that finance has really been dropped out of everything, you know. You know, my stab in the dark is going to be probably about a quarter of the overall generation.
You would say 25%?
Yeah, I'm sure it would lack, and other generations is too, you know.
Oh, absolutely. It lacks in the generation I'm in, probably the one you're in and all that. Well, I have a piece of news for you. That is a winning number because the answer is 24%, and I had a plus or minus 2 bracket on it. So you are right in there, and I appreciate the call and congratulations. We'll talk about the implications of that a little later. But
good show. I was wondering where your new startup is, and here she is today.
Yep,
and welcome aboard.
Well, you know, one of these days we hope to walk into the office and say that everybody inside that office is a certified financial planner.
I'm working on it.
She's working on it every day. So we'll get there. I have no doubts in my mind. All right, we're going to put you. I'm sorry?
There should be a line at your door then.
We'll figure that out. Make it happen.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, we'll put you on hold and get your address, and we'll send you a little something from Mr. Bales.
Thank you much.
I do love spending Ken's money.
I'm the one who sends it.
Well, yeah, it's true. He supplies it. You send it. All I do is ask questions till somebody earns one.
This is true.
Okay, the best gig ever. All right, only 24% of you know anything appreciable about things financial. What in the world are you going to do about it as a generation?
I mean, I can't really speak for my entire generation, but I'd like to say that trying to up financial and hopefully common sense, which is no longer as common, would be beneficial to our generation.
Well, by you joining the fraternity of fee-only planners, so to speak, you can help a lot of them. It's always a shame for people like us that we feel like we can only help one person at a time, and we'd like to do more. But there are people out there, you know, the Dave Ramseys with their millions of listeners and that sort of thing, who do a lot of good. But as far as I'm concerned, being in this job is more about one at a time helping people and the ones that you help doing really, really well over time. That's hopefully what you're
learning. I completely agree. That's the whole reason I've always wanted to help people in general. So I just didn't occur to me until sat down and talked with you guys that I could do that through finances. I always thought it had to be, you know, through charity or through the health admin section, but nope, I can help people maintain their finances or grow them just so that they're not worrying.
The number of people or the percentage of people who even understand what kind of business we do is very small.
Mm-hmm.
That we're, of course, trying to get the news out, and if you are watching TV lately, the CFP board is putting out quite an extensive advertising campaign, and you can get to that website by, is it findaplanner.com? Adam, is that right? Do you know? Or make a plan?
I don't. Which?
It's Find a Planner or Make a Plan. I think if you type in Let's Make a Plan.
Let's Make a Plan.org,
okay.
I think.
Anyway, companies like ours are out there pretty much every place. In fact, we've got some stories about that too. But as time is flying by, as it always does, and I'm going to get into some more details with Megan, both about what she is doing personally and about what is needed for the younger people in the country to make their own way. And the first question I'm going to ask her is going to be real simple. What is your opinion about your own chances to get Social Security?
I don't want to think about that.
I'll give her a couple minutes over the break to consider that. Everybody knows it's in trouble. Everybody knows it needs to be fixed. Everybody knows that the worst thing a politician can do is to talk about it, except I think the worst thing from now on that a politician can do is to not talk about it. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Megan Todd.
All right, and we are talking today about millennials because of the presence of a millennial. We've been chatting a little bit about surprising things just during the break there. And one of them, I think this is humorous enough to bring up, one of the things that is happening among millennials has to do with some of our favorite spirits.
Yeah, especially during COVID. So liquor sales are about 5% increase month over month for since like 2018. And it varies maybe a percent a month, if that. But in April, so right after the real stress of the pandemic hit, it went up to 12% increase. But by June, it was up to 40% more purchases in liquor. And I don't know if that's a staying at home and needing something to do, or if stress, or
daddy's liquor cabinet is cheaper than your own, right?
Very true.
I did get a kick out of that too. But another one that caught my eye, hair color.
Yeah, if you can't go to the salon, what are you gonna do? You don't want to have your grays, I mean, present company excluded.
But I haven't seen gray hair on this one yet. I was just surprised by that. Millennials, what's the oldest millennial now? About 40 years old?
Math.
40, 41?
Somewhere around
that's
there.
Pretty early gray. But it was the magnitude of the jump, it was over 30%. That's what surprised me.
Yeah.
Other things they like to do. What would you rather have, tangible things or experiences?
Experiences, that's like the main thing. But funnily enough, it's actually coinciding. Adam brought this to my attention this week, actually, when I was prepping for the show. It's coinciding with tangible in terms of like RV, campers, and boats. I have a neighbor who,
a way to do both.
Yeah, I have a neighbor who, luckily enough, was able to find the RV that she wanted pretty immediately. But any starter version of that is you're waiting. What was it, Adam? Like 6-10 months just for it to even get on the lot.
All the production times are all the plants are running at full capacity. And if you order a boat right now, you're lucky to have it in 3 to 6 months.
And there again, that's kind of the cross between the tangible and the intangible.
Exactly.
Your experiences begin the day you get it. And I thought, to me, it seems a little extravagant. I mean, here's the 70-year-old looking down at it and thinking, do these people really have a handle on how much money they're going to need in retirement?
It's kind of debatable. I mean, I've always been the outlier because, I mean, my family, even before I worked with you guys, we've known y'all for years. So it's instilled financial stability in me. But only 30% of millennials even have an emergency fund.
You were probably a teenager when I first met you. When they
yeah, brought, right when I hit 18.
Yeah, they asked me one day if I minded that they bring you in and talk, and I said, yeah, under one circumstance, you're not in the room, and I will not tell you anything that Megan doesn't specifically allow me to tell you.
Yep.
And there were no secrets or anything, but my introduction began, because I always want to know who I'm dealing with. I said, how much money do you think you're going to need in retirement? And her answer was, at least $4 million.
I said, I think we need to add about $10 million
well,
to that now.
But anybody who understands the concept that you got to have a lot of money if you're going to retire nowadays is on my okay list. Let's talk. In fact, I was doing a little research on that this morning too. My generation of retirees, the ones that are well off, are really not even living the lifestyle that they did when they were working. And that's just crazy. Work until you've got enough money to live your lifestyle. Don't quit just to quit working. That's just me. Much more on that later. All right, let's talk about house buying.
So, like I said earlier, we're living in the parents' basements, or, you know, if you're in Florida, maybe it's the second floor because we don't...
inverse basement.
The inverse basement. And that's even after graduating college. I mean, I have my own... I have a master's degree as well. So, graduates ranging from, like, the 23 to 26 age, we're still relying somewhat in a variety of senses on our parents or our family financially. And we don't start looking to buy a house until around 29, 30. And that's because the 10, 20% down payment, it's getting harder and harder to save with the, like, especially currently with the, it being a seller's market, you have to save more. And most of us, our age group are okay spending about $100,000 to $200,000, but it's slowly
trying to find a house.
Yeah. Trying to find a house. But then it's like, only 27% of people are okay spending between the $200,000 and $300,000, and it drops down to 15% wanting to spend anything over $300,000.
Adam, were you the one that was bringing up the median price of homes going so high?
Yeah, it was up more than 17% year over year.
Now, it is important to understand that's a median, which is not the same as an average. But that means,
but the average was up over 12% year over year. So
more relevant number to me.
Yeah.
That one of them, the median number, is more reflective of what's for sale. The average is more reflective of what does it cost.
Exactly.
And it's a lot of money. So what do you recommend to your own friends? How are you going to conquer this big hurdle?
I mean, it's hard to tell my generation anything.
I've noticed.
At all. My advice would honestly be forego that extra expensive restaurant or that extra expensive hotel or experience now and be able to put that 10, 20% in savings or into an investment account to hopefully get your house faster and get out of the basement.
That was where I was going with the experience versus tangible goods. I love the fact that we were able to do some things when our kids were young, to go skiing and take trips to Florida and that kind of thing. But I had to go back and look at the world again through eyes your age. I would very definitely have done a few things differently.
Yeah.
And it would have been working toward real estate. I just don't see a world coming up where your generation will be happy with their parents forever. I know it works in the other way, too. Parents would probably appreciate that. But I don't think, and this again was Howard and Angela were talking about it, it doesn't look like anytime soon this housing price thing, I hesitate to use the word bubble, it looks like they're going to be really expensive for a long, long time if you want to live in a nice area.
That's true. And unfortunately, I will have to say that millennials probably have some pretty expensive taste, given that our predecessors have spoiled us, for lack of a better term.
But one of the things that you personally did right was you were very diligent in school, and having put away a lot of money for school costs, you got a lot of that back by scholarships and working.
I was about to say, we barely touched anything in terms of, I mean, even in grad school, I was able to work a certain amount of time during the week, and they paid for my entire education at the school. So,
and that is probably the biggest takeaway for kids today who are upwardly mobile. Do not blow your life fortune
on school,
on an education.
Yeah, but now I missed getting the Biden school fund reimbursement.
Yeah, it hasn't passed yet.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I had to work a lot harder to not spend that money,
exactly.
And now someone's just going to be handed it.
Yeah, you go to war with the army you've got, and at the time it was a good idea. It's still a good idea.
Yeah.
The value of that education is not going to do anything but go up, in my opinion, as long as it's practical.
That's true. I mean, but I'm starting to notice that the college degree is going the way of the high school degree. You're not it's not going as far, which is why I immediately went to the graduate degree. In the next, I don't know, generation or two, it's going to be a doctorate. You're going to have one before anybody takes you seriously.
Or nothing. If you get recruited, if you got the right skills, you get recruited by the right company, they're much more interested in what you can do rather than what degrees you've got.
Well, that's true, but then there's no upward mobility. They're seeing that still.
That's absolutely true. In other words, it's a dilemma to be in the position you're in. What I am happy about is that 24% of millennials are able to talk some turkey. What I'm not so wild about is that there are 76% of you who can't.
That's true. And I mean, I was lucky. My grandmother started my education fund, and here I am today without student loans. So,
and by the way, that's advice I give to everybody who comes into the office. You want to give your kids and your grandkids something to actually do some good in their lives, start a 529 plan, a prepaid or something. They're probably, even at young ages now, going to want to get a college education. You'll earn an extra $1 million if you've got one over time. And if you want to afford a house today, that $1 million is going to be a very, very important million. Well, thanks, Megan. We appreciate it. We'll see you all next week, same time. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.